Bye-bye, Attorney Wade. Breaking news here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Getting reported just moments ago across all the major networks. Attorney Wade has resigned from his role in the Georgia Fulton County prosecution of Donald Trump and 13 co-defendants. Writing in his resignation letter today, he noted that defendants had, quote, failed to meet their burden of proving an actual conflict. But he said, quote, I am offering my resignation in the interest of democracy and dedication to the American public and to move this case forward as quickly as possible. I am sure that the case and the team will be in good hands moving forward and justice will be served. For those just tuning in, the decision coming down earlier today from Judge McAfee in the matter related to Donald Trump's criminal prosecution. The defendants had brought an allegation that District Attorney Willis suffered from a conflict of interest and had personally financially benefited, and thus her and her entire office had to be booted from the case. The judge today, earlier today, rejecting that argument, but stated, and again, I just read it on the air, that an odor of mendacity remains, concluding that there is an appearance of impropriety in requiring either the entire district attorney's office or Attorney Wade, Nathan Wade, step down from the case. Attorney Wade stepping down just moments ago. Willis accepted Wade's resignation in a letter, which is also a little weird. Okay. Like, so he writes the letter, I quit. And then she writes a letter, okay, I accept you quit. And this is what she writes in the letter. Cause I want to ask my guest, Attorney Emil Oviagile, what would he have done in this circumstance? But just hang on. This is what she writes in the letter responding to his resignation letter today. Quote, I will always remember. I mean, like, cue the Whitney Houston, right? And I will always remember and will remind everyone that you were brave enough to step forward and take on the investigation and prosecution of the allegations that the defendants in this case engaged in a conspiracy to overturn Georgia's 2020 presidential election. Like, why is she writing this letter? It's like messy. And like, why is she saying you were brave enough? Like, she's the district attorney. It's, I don't know. Now, granted, he was the lead special prosecutor, but ultimately it's her office that's charging. I don't know. It seems weird. So let me start with this. What would you have done, say you were a prosecutor, and you have to put together a big team, bring in some outside help, because you're prosecuting, you know, say, an incredibly involved 50-state political conspiracy to stage a coup d'etat and overthrow a government, and you found yourself falling in love with, you know, these things happen, we're human beings, but you fall in love with one of your outside lawyers that you brought in. What would you have done, Attorney Emil?
Well, there's an African saying, right? And I'll say it in pidgin. It's a Nigerian saying, which is a colloquial language. I'll explain what it means. It says, "Bird we know what in they use in feather they do know the fly low." It means a bird that knows the worth of its feathers doesn't fly low. So obviously when the stakes are that high, so what that means is, so for example, you think about an average bird, right? If a bird knows that, hey, you know, my feathers are being used to make pillow, you don't fly catchable height, right? And it goes beyond, because when you think about it that way, it goes beyond what's right, what's wrong, is it fair that, you know, what the standards are, it's just whatever. It's, they are what they are. The stakes are that high. You don't fly that low, period.
Yeah.
So immediately, you know, after this broke, the first thing Fannie should have done was absolutely step aside from the case and have him step aside from the case. And you get another special prosecutor who's not been involved whatsoever, probably either independent or
leaning conservative.
Because that's the thing. The merits of the case remain. It's a very strong case. It's like I tell my Christian friends, it's like going to, if you're a Christian and you believe in the Bible, it's like going to a church and has a crappy pastor.
You get it. She got it.
Sorry. That doesn't change the your beliefs or in the authenticity or the fundamental truth that the Bible holds, right?
Right.
And that's what we have here. So the case is solid. The issues are real. So I'm actually, the funniest part of his resignation letter that you just read is the part where he talks about, this is Attorney Wade, where he talks about wanting to step aside for expediency or whatever.
Yeah, you
right?
could have done that
You could
months
have done
ago.
That months
what
ago.
Were you waiting for?
Absolutely. But ego. Because,
of course,
because lawyers
right?
are, you know.
Egoologists.
There we go. That's the word I was looking for.
I made it up yesterday, on Tuesday, talking about Aaron Rodgers and Robert F. Kennedy. Those are, we can all learn how to egoologize from Aaron Rodgers and RFK. We got a text coming in. Maggie and Emil, how do we the people fight the stank, as Maggie calls it? Justice Thomas won't recuse himself in the face of blatant bias with his wife Ginny engaged in coordinating the January 6th insurrection. Plus, Justice Roberts feels there is no need for oversight of the justices or the Supreme Court as a whole. Isn't there a way the Congress or Senate can enforce oversight of the Supreme Court? This is from Carmela in Milwaukee. Thank you for the question. My answer has always been the same. We vote and we ask and demand that Congress act to legislate and control the power of the Supreme Court. That is what remains for us to do. Attacking gerrymandering is a really good start because we want to depolarize and de-extreme all of these congressional districts, right? And by doing that, you will create elected officials who have to compromise in order to remain in office. By doing so, they will recognize that effectively the power of the legislature on a federal level has been nearly eviscerated to beyond a level that is knowable in modern American history by the Supreme Court and its particularly its use of the shadow docket. Mm-hmm. I mean, they have just increased power. You talk to any constitutional or Supreme Court scholar, and they're like, this is an unrecognizable Supreme Court. The idea that an unrecognizably powerful Supreme Court now says, oh, we don't need any rules about our ethics. Y'all just trust us. Ain't the point anymore, right? If you look at sort of the public surveys about public satisfaction with the Supreme Court, it's at an all-time low. Mm-hmm. Some surveys putting it at less than 30%. Usually they hovered around like 50 to 60%. We have a crisis of confidence in the courts. So Congress, Carmela, my answer is we got to vote. We got to actually make every vote count. We need to make voting easier, not harder. Ensure that our elections are from a digital perspective, like an IT security perspective, secured. We need to continue the transparency that exists in this state. We need to increase transparency in other states where it's not as good as the way that we do it in Wisconsin. De-gerrymander our districts and start to demand actual legislation from Congress. What do you think about where the Supreme Court sits right now, Emil?
In terms, I think the question is what we can do. I think we need to start talking to each other again.
Mm-hmm.
I still believe in the promise of America. I still believe that there is more that binds us, that separates us. Throughout this entire rigmarole, by and large, I have avoided the temptation to lose friends over their attraction for Trump or their attachment to Trump. I believe that that's the wrong thing to do because, number one, I've never learned anything new from someone I totally agree with. And again, like I said, this is not a Republican-Democrat thing. I have Republican candidates who I respect and politicians in who I will support. But with Donald Trump, this is an existential crisis. And in terms of even with the Supreme Court and how it's gotten here, the reason we've gotten a very politicized court is because we've become even more divided. And the price for admittance for those positions has become more blatant. There was a time when
Litmus
those questions used to be a little bit less on the nose.
Yeah, a little
now
distasteful. Yeah.
Will you overturn Roe v. Wade?
Right.
I want a yes or I want a no. If it's a no and you don't answer it correctly, you're gone. Will you expand executive privileges? It's a yes or it's a no. And again, because of the politicization and how divided we've become and how we have rewarded that divisions because we keep rewarding it.
Yeah, that's what I mean about the voting. We keep doing it. We keep putting in place people that are partisan extremists. That's democracies move by inches not by miles, right? And we can move by inches in the in sort of the arc of justice and progress, or we can start to move very rapidly. And I mean, we move inches forward, but you can regress at lightning speed. That is what history has shown us. I just wanted to say again the saying that you shared with all of us, a bird that knows the worth of its feathers does not fly low. And I think, you know, it speaks to, again, when folks like the district attorney or me and myself and my prior job, you have to do this stuff at the highest standard of the profession. I wanted to read from you. This is an old Supreme Court decision that talks about the burden of the government lawyer. And I wanted to get your reaction. Here goes. I think we got enough. Oh, yeah, we got enough time. An inscription on the walls of the Department of Justice states the position candidly for the federal domain. The United States wins its point whenever justice is done its citizens in the courts. There's no reason why the same maxim does not apply to state and municipal government as well. Of course, government attorneys are not neutrals, they are advocates. We believe, though, that the following observation of the former Solicitor General Simon Soboloff and later a judge on the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit applies well to all government lawyers at all levels. Government lawyers are not neutrals, they are advocates. But an advocate for a client whose business is not merely to prevail in the instant case. The government's chief business is not to achieve victory, but to establish justice. We are constantly reminded of the now classic words penned by one of my predecessors, Frederick William Lehman, that the government wins its point when justice is done in its courts. And I think that's, you know, when we talk about the legitimacy of both the courts and government lawyers, this is the piece that's missing. We don't see people that have partisan patina or seem to be affiliated in a partisan way with one side or the other, especially when it's on the right, doing things that don't aid that political cause. And that's the problem, right? We want to see that balance return. We're going to have more with Attorney Emil Oviagale when we come back after these brief messages. We're going to finally get to the licensing, one of the things that you're an expert in among so many topics. You got a question for Attorney Emil, 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842.
Life treats you kind. I hope you have all you dreamed of.
Got my driver's license last week, just like we always talked about.
Welcome back, Wisconsin. I'm joined this hour by Attorney Emil Oviagale, based out of Milwaukee. We were sharing a little bit about what the standard should be for government actors, for elected officials, and especially government lawyers. You appear before so many local licensing bodies. You've appeared in every kind of court imaginable. How are we doing? You know, when I say the standard should be way the hell up here, I don't care if folks are conservative or progressive. We, the people, should be demanding the highest level of faith and dedication to the general public interest. How are local officials, how are courts doing in your estimation, in your practice? I'm not talking about the feds or SCOTUS, but what do you think?
I'll say, you know, at the trial court levels and at the state, you know, state and federal, I think our judges are doing a fantastic job. I primarily practice, in courts across the state, Milwaukee County, the Eastern District, and we have a slate of excellent judges currently. Some quite younger, energetic, in Milwaukee County and across the state, and that's something I think Governor Evers has done a fantastic job at, and they're trying to get it right, and they really care, so I mean. That's the base level, right? So I expect that. So I'm glad that those expectations are holding true. I think at the trial court level, you know, and even on the federal side of things, the judges are still attacking these issues with academic, you know, with the rigor and intellectual rigors that these issues deserve, and are being fair. But you know, there is a lesser part of the quasi-judicial process that people are not familiar with, which will be, you know, due process hearings that happen before municipal boards or local local counties or local municipalities.
And tell people, and like, stuff, why would, what leads to that is a business seeks a license to do XYZ.
Yeah. So let's just kind of start with the basics, right? So in general, you know, all power, they say, is somewhat localized. Based on even the state constitution, local municipalities and cities and counties have a great degree of policing powers to govern what happens within their communities, right? So, and from zoning to who gets to do a certain type of business, you know, liquor, you know, applying the liquor laws and things like that. Very, very broad powers, right? And it's something that I think is important because, you know, what may work for the you know, the city of Madison may not work for, you know, for the city of Milwaukee or for the city of Waukesha. So
this is the root of that old conservative adage about local control.
Absolutely.
The folks that live in the community know how to, the rules to create to help benefit community wellness. That's the presumption.
Absolutely, 100%. And so one of the areas where this tends to show up a lot is in business licensing. So a lot of, in a lot of cities, you require certain types of licenses to do certain things. So for example, if you wanted to have a bar, you require, you know, a license by the local municipality or the city. If you wanted to own a tattoo shop, if you wanted to be a contractor, I mean, I would tell you that in some cities, the amount of local control, the amount of professions that are regulated is absurd.
Yep.
This is a conservative in me. I do think that in the city of Milwaukee, especially, There is an abnormal amount of professions that are licensed.
Well, it's a way to generate fees.
Absolutely.
Right? They're regulating, but you got to apply and you pay a fee and blah, blah, blah.
But it's also a way to take away powers from the people invested in a political class that, with all due respect, tends to be quite incompetent in either understanding the issues or the burdens or the duties that they have to exert, despite always saying that they understand the Constitution. I guarantee you, half of the politicians in the state have never read the Constitution.
Oh,
they
swear
all the
easily.
Time. Probably almost all of them.
Yeah.
And they swear all of them to understand.
Nor do they read the legislation that they pass.
Nor do they understand the implications or the impacts, right? Because, you know, and at the local level, you have this thing called automatic privilege and automatic control. And, you know, they get into their little fiefdoms and they get really, really, really excited and, you know, and it becomes ego again.
So you're describing each alderman, and this applies even where you have town boards.
Absolutely.
So it's just whatever the nomenclature of your jurisdiction, depending on size. But in a city, you have a common council with alderpersons.
Yes.
And they come from a geographic district. And so when you say fiefdom, you mean that geographic district.
Yes.
There are certain people that they know, sometimes donors, but also people of a certain profile within those districts that wield an enormous amount of control about what happens in that district because they have access to that local elected official.
100%. But it's not right now. We're not seeing just that. We're seeing just a basic lack of understanding of certain procedures. So let me be very specific. So take the city of Milwaukee, for example. That's a city that I practice a lot of licensing. I go before a lot for licensing matters for businesses, right? You have a city that has a lot of some secondary issues, right, with crime and all of that stuff, right?
Yep.
So you have local officials, in my opinion, who are somewhat clueless about solutions for these problems, right? And so whenever a business comes up, you know, let's say it's your local tattoo bar, your local bar, or whatever, they use it as a way to shift blame and shift attention from the root causes and say, hey, you know what? So your car got broken into. It must be the bar's fault. It's like, no, it really isn't. What are you doing? Because it forces, or at least it creates this perception of, hey, we're doing everything we're doing. We can't. We're holding them accountable, right? But the thing about it, it's lip service, right? But these little decisions have a tremendous amount of impact in communities and also the local economies in these cities.
Mostly, and listen, Black and brown folks, but also we've talked about the fact that immigrant-owned businesses tend to get absolutely put through the ringer before these kinds of committees. And to be really clear about what Attorney Oviagile is saying is that if there is, you know, crime that's increasing in a particular aldermanic district, oftentimes they will, the licensing committee will point to the business owners and effectively lay blame at various business owners' feet instead of engaging with what is the most difficult of public policy questions, which is how do you get upstream to prevent crime, to better increase the wellness, literacy, access to capital, investment opportunities, educational. That's hard. Yanking somebody's liquor license is low-hanging fruit. Am I getting it?
100%. Let me just bring it home in an example. So think
we got just about a minute.
That's fine. So think about this, right? And this has happened a lot of times. You have a gas station owner who owns a gas station. There's a police report that says that, oh, you know, at a certain time, someone went outside and shot a gun up in the air, like on the street. Then these people bring us back in, this politicians. They say, hey, what do you intend to do to stop that? And we're like, I don't know. What do you intend to do?
Yeah,
to
we
stop
can't
that?
Regulate guns. What do you? Right? I can't pull guns. I can't arrest people. What the? I'm just trying to sell some snacks and some gas.
And make a living.
Where can people find you, Attorney Oviagale?
Yeah, I'm the managing partner of OVB Law and Consulting. It's a firm located in Milwaukee. We are located at 836 North Plankinton. Our website is www.ovblaw.com. Our phone number is 414-585-0588.
That is ovblaw.com. Thank you, Emil. You're a dear friend.
Thank you for having
me. But so freaking, not but, and
this
so smart
fun.
And articulate. Can't wait to have you back. I'm Maggie Dawn. We're going to bring out the props when I come back, everybody. Cannot wait. We're going to have some fun Friday, little flashback here on the Maggie Dawn Show. Keep it locked. Farm update coming up next here on the Civic Media Radio Network. What's up, Wisconsin? Happy Friday, everybody. First and foremost, my big thanks to my friend and fellow attorney, Emil Oviagale, based out of Milwaukee. Great guest. Heck yeah, Emil can keep up with me. You should see us when we got a couple cocktails in us. I mean, that's the for the reals. I will be looking forward to doing that with Emil real soon. Thank you so much, Emil. I appreciate you and your work. It's Flashback Friday. It's Fun Friday. I wanted to lighten it up going into the weekend because we have a packed show next week. Again, we're going to kick off Monday with Alderman Bob Bauman from the city of Milwaukee. Bob's been around forever. He's sort of what I would consider to be one of those knowledgeable, older, more experienced local politicians. He knows how stuff works. On Tuesday, we've got Reggie Jackson and Rob Henkin from Wisconsin Policy Forum. Reggie Jackson, a Milwaukee historian, student of the racial history of Wisconsin and Milwaukee. It's going to be Reggie and Rob Tuesday on the Maggie Dawn Show. And Wednesday, gosh, mark your calendars. I'm going to do a sit down with Mayor Cavalier Johnson, a nice long interview, getting to know Chevy a bit more. So lots coming up next week. But today I wanted to share a little something from you because it's from the vaults. This is going back to 2018. It was basically the first time I ever did any kind of media interview. Like, legit, the first time. I had never been interviewed on the radio. I had never been on television before. I had never spoken on any media, right? Ever. And the email that I got was right after I filed lawsuits on behalf of Milwaukee County against the opioid manufacturers and distributors. And one day in my county email box, it was like so-and-so at productionfoxnews.com. And I was like, what? Someone from Fox News? What? And I read it and they said, do you want to do a hit on Fox and Friends morning show? Which is this thing that's seen by, I don't know, like 15 million stinking people. And I thought, I can't, the irony that the first time I'm ever going to do any kind of media interview at all, ever, was going to be on Fox and Friends in the morning. So I am going to be playing that segment for you. You are not going to want to miss it. It was so wild. First and foremost, you don't. There's a studio basically that you go to that's for public use, more or less. Like, you have to be doing a legit news hit. But it's the, if you ever watch public television in Wisconsin, when you're watching the telethons and they're in this place, that is generally the studio that folks will go to if the local affiliate is broadcasting or doesn't have space for you. So like Fox would usually work with their local affiliate, but because this was Fox's Fox and Friends and it was national and almost all these stations have their own local morning shows running. So I went to the local public television studio and Fox has a guy come there and they've got these different backdrops that show that you're in Milwaukee. It was really cool. There's like a green room. Now, lest anybody think it was too fabulous, like there was no one there doing my hair or makeup. And I had to get, I think my hit was at 7 a.m. East Coast time, which meant I was going on the air between like 6 and 6:15 in the morning local time, which meant they picked me up at 4:30 in the morning because they're sound testing and mic checking and light checking and blah, blah, blah. So I got up at like probably 3 a.m. Oh, my Lord. And I was nervous. I've done courtroom work. I've done committee work. I've appeared at state courts, federal courts, all over the place. I was nervous. It's the TV. You get one shot at it. And it was so damn early in the morning. I kept, you know, I had like pages of notes, as I still do for the radio every day, much to my producer's chagrin. It's, you know, I'm like the Pigpen of radio person. I come in and there's just this cloud of paperwork all around me. Anya's nodding. Yes.
No, I'm shaking my head. I'm usually the cloud of paper. To the point that Maggie so thoughtfully has gifted me a notebook, a thing where all the papers stay together.
Yeah, little moleskin.
So I'm learning from you, Maggie.
Oh, well, listen, everybody needs a moleskin. It helps keep my entire life organized. So I was mainlining coffee. It was the only thing I could do. I was like, I got to get myself ready. You got to get the mouth moving. I was running lines in the mirror. I could not... And I was jittery as all get out. Now, my best friend in the whole world, who is a public relations expert and a communications expert, was so kind to volunteer to come down to meet me at 3 o'clock in the morning and help me decide what to wear. Because heaven forbid a woman look like too harsh on television. And I'm going on Fox and they only wear these short little dresses. I wasn't going to do that. I was going to wear a suit coat. You know, like, what color blouse do I wear? These are the things that women ponder when we're going on national television. So she came down. She helped me do that. She helped me effectively get my mouth moving correctly, helped me test some lines. But I had really no idea what they were going to ask me about, which was the really sort of frightening beyond belief thing, as well as, all right, come on, give it to me. Like, if I can, it was sort of, I will have been to Oz and seen the wizard if I can manage a Fox and Friends interview. Because I wasn't missing the fact that, one, I was going after Big Pharma, right? This is the literal David and Goliath kind of story. I was going after Big Pharma. There had always been Big Pharma's PR response to all of these lawsuits was basically... these are addicts and bad people and it's their fault. That had been their line forever in various ways, shapes, and forms. And so this sort of air of the personal responsibility narrative, right? And I'm from Milwaukee. So it's like you put all these things, I'm attacking Big Pharma, personal responsibility, and I'm from Milwaukee, a notoriously blue district. So I knew I was getting into some such and such probably on the Fox and Friends. So I was prepared and trying to think, all right, what's going to be the gotcha question? And I really had no idea, right? So I guess that's enough of a lead in. So this is me. I think I went live on air at about 6:05 in the morning. And by the way, there's no one in the studio except the guy that hits like go on the video on the big camera. That's it. Look here. So you can't see what's on television. You can't see your interviewer. They're just in an earpiece in your ear. You're talking into the black lens, you know, talking into a camera's weird. And then my best friend is standing behind the camera guy. So here's me on Fox and Friends back in March of 2018.
336 people died from opioids in Milwaukee County last year. That number doubled from 5 years ago. Joining us now is Milwaukee County Corporation Counsel Margaret Dawn. Margaret, thank you very much for being here. So first of all, tell us about the approach you're taking. This is not just about drug dealers on the street. You're going to the source. Tell us about it.
Right. We think that, you know, if you're a drug pusher on the street or a Fortune 50 company, if you're complicit in taking the lives of Milwaukee County residents and citizens, we're going to come after you. So on Wednesday, we filed a civil lawsuit against 13 of this nation's largest opioid manufacturers and distributors to seek injunctive relief as well as monetary damages and assistance in repairing our communities from the devastation that these businesses intentionally have wreaked on Milwaukee County.
So, Margaret, let me make a comparison here. So a layperson, I say, okay, is this similar to suing a gun manufacturer if it's the person selling it or giving it was doing something illegal or improper, like a doctor overprescribing? Why is it the fault of the drug maker if it is used improperly? Because there are reasons why these drugs are out there for legitimate purposes.
Well, let me start with the analogy to a gun manufacturer. If a gun manufacturer sold you a gun and told you, don't worry, it won't harm you, then you might have a claim. That's the actual analogy here. These manufacturers knew that they were making an inherently very addictive, very dangerous drug. And instead of being truthful about that, they intentionally lied. And they created shell industry groups and paid off physicians to tell other physicians that these drugs, even if used long term, did not pose a significant risk of addiction. And that was simply false. And that's truly the gravamen of our claims.
Interesting point. Definitely. We're going to read a statement briefly from the Healthcare Distribution Alliance, which represents the drug distributors. They say this in response. Those bringing lawsuits would be better served addressing the root causes rather than trying to redirect blame through litigation. So they're saying we make a drug, we put it out there, and people misuse it or abuse it. That's not necessarily our fault. Your claim is they're misrepresenting the effects of the drug, formally or informally?
Formally, they in industry statements, in their education for doctors and physicians, in studies that they published, they claimed that these drugs were simply not addictive. And as many of your viewers, I'm sure, well know, that have family, friends, coworkers that are struggling with addictions with these medications,
yeah,
that was simply false. Let me further say, To the gentleman that provided the industry commentary, I find that surprising since his clients have already accepted blame for this epidemic. In fact, McKesson, the largest drug distributor in the United States, paid over $150 million in a settlement in 2017. But I think the bigger picture here is that we wouldn't be sitting here, we wouldn't be having this discussion if the drug distributors and manufacturers obeyed the law, specifically the Controlled Substances Act. They didn't. These drugs have poured into our communities. And when Congress relaxed the regulatory structure in 2016 after significant lobbying by these companies, we've had no choice but to seek justice in the courts. And every American should take some hope in that we can hold even the largest companies accountable for their wrongdoing.
Margaret Dawn, we have to leave it right there. Big problem.
Okay. So Flashback Friday, to me, it was so vintage Fox and Friends to be like, well, how is it this like guns? Like gun manufacturers, they're not responsible when people use their guns and kill people. It's like, yeah, not a good analogy. Would be like gun manufacturers if they passed out guns and said, don't worry, can't hurt you. I mean, such vintage baloney from Fox. Oh, well, you know, root causes. No, you lied to the entirety of America for over 25 years and basically built the greatest surge of wealth in pharmaceutical companies on the backs of dying Americans across every racial demographic, every age demographic, every wealth demographic. And not a single one of those people has ever gone to jail or prison. That's called a two-tier system of justice. And again, that ain't about Democrats and Republicans. It ain't about liberals and progressives, folks. That's about the wealthy and powerful with access and everybody else like me and you. I'm going to bring out the props after this next little break. I'm so excited. I've been waiting. It felt appropriate today. The sun is shining. Let's have some yucks together, everybody, here on this fun Friday on the Maggie Dawn Show. We'll be back with props and yolks in just a few minutes. Keep it locked, everybody.
You're my doll, rock and roll, feel the glamour in pink. Kiss me here, touch me there, hanky-panky.
You can touch, you can play. If you say, I'm always yours. I'm a Barbie girl, in the Barbie world. Life in plastic, it's fantastic. You can brush my hair, undress me everywhere. Imagination, life is your creation.
Come on Barbie, let's go party.
Wisconsin. I've been waiting all day to do this. As many of you know, I lived in New York for a number of years back in sort of the early mid 2000s. And at that time, Donald Trump was on NBC doing The Apprentice. Now, I never went to a taping, never wanted to go to that, but I was in 30 Rock all the time. In and around, most people I knew wanted to go check it out, see the skating rink, go up to the fancy Nancy expensive restaurant. And they always wanted to go to the gift shop. So I'm in the gift shop. This is probably around like 2006, 2007-ish. And there is a talking Donald Trump doll. This is why you want to watch me if I on Facebook, Twitter, X.
It's X now, I think.
And the gram, is that all the
video? Oh, no, we're on YouTube. Facebook, X, and YouTube. There
YouTube.
You go. YouTube,
okay. So I'm showing everybody the Donald Trump doll that I got at the NBC. This has got to be worth something now. I mean, like, what would you pay for it? I'm not selling mine, but I'm curious. It talks. I have selected some of my most favorite talking things, little statements, because he makes about 20 of them. It's wild, like, and it sounds creepily like Donald Trump. So should we just start? I'm going to hit a bunch of these, and then I'm going to tell you my favorite ones. Now, everybody's welcome to text in 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Text or call in with your favorite Trumpisms that the doll says. Now, remember, all of this was coming from The Apprentice. One of the things I'll note, if you're watching, he's thin. He's very, very svelte. Again, you know.
Yet the forward lurch remains.
The forward lurch. Okay. You ready? Because we got to crank up my mic to get all the doll sounds. Here's the first one. Here, I'm just going to hit him one after the other. It's fun. And he's got a button in his back. It's like you stick your hand up his back and make him talk. All right, here we go.
Always maintain your momentum.
Can you crank it up? I need to hold it on the microphone.
I've made some mistakes in my time, but you really screwed up. When confronted with your
Okay, let's just pause there for that one. When confronted with your mistakes, you made one excuse after another. I hate excuses. Really? This is the guy that's... That's rich. Okay, some more. Here we go again.
Stay focused.
This is one of my favorites.
Remember, the buck starts here.
That starts here, not stops here. The buck starts here. Okay, couple more. Here we go.
I should fire myself just for having you around. This one's easy for me. You're fired. That was a tough one. Ideas are welcome, but make sure you have the right one.
That's weird. Little creepy. Ideas are welcome, but make sure you have the right ones. Okay. Couple more.
Think big and live large. In my businesses, you've got to be tough. You underperformed and you let people walk all over you. As a result, I have to tell you, you're fired.
Now, this is one of my favorites, because is he talking about himself? I think so. Here it is.
You really think you're a good leader? I don't.
I mean, it's so creepy. It's so creepy. It goes on and on. So I have the Donald Trump action figure. Svelte 2006 model. So much fun. Now, I bought this at the same time as the Donald Trump doll at a different novelty store. At the time, you may all recall, Hillary Clinton was the senator from New York. Here, this one doesn't talk, but you can see it. Is America ready for this nutcracker? It's a Hillary Clinton nutcracker. The promotional lines on the box, stainless steel thighs, cracks toughest nuts. And then they have satirical quotes on the back of the box. This one, they've got Barack Obama saying, I can feel Bill's pain. It doesn't age really well, does it? This one I like. This one aged pretty well. This one they attribute satirically to Dick Cheney. I guess the battle against the vast right wingnut conspiracy is still on. Oh, yes, Dick. Very, very much, very much so. This is Kim Jong the Second. We got a different North Korean leader now. But Kim Jong the Second, I'd be getting nervous if I was one of those nut jobs. This one aged so well. It's my favorite from the back of the Hillary Clinton nutcracker box. Woo! This one, Rudy Giuliani. Here's what they got Giuliani saying about the Clinton nutcracker. I can feel the squeeze from 50 feet away. Enjoy bankruptcy and maybe prison, Rudy. I mean... just think about the context here, right? I bought these in like mid-2000. And I had them at my big law job back in New York. I would have these two caricatures on a shelf, sort of looking at each other. No one back then thought Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump will both be the candidates for president in 2016, a decade later.
Did you perhaps change our future, Maggie, by placing them on some sort of...
Oh, God, don't put that on me.
I shouldn't, but it's where my screenwriter brain goes.
I manifested it.
We got to go back to that shelf and put two better candidates or anybody on that shelf and see what happens, I think.
Yeah, just a teddy bear.
Maybe there's a picture of, like, Kanye and RFK on that shelf right now, and that's why they've been running for all these campaigns.
It's the magic shelf. I didn't do this. I don't have a magic shelf. I will not take responsibility.
Okay.
But like literally a clown, if you will, literally you can stick your hand up his back and make him talk, saying the same vacuous nothingness statements that he does now. I mean, I've made some mistakes in my time, but you really screwed up when confronted with your mistakes. You made one excuse after the another. I hate excuses. You're fired? No, Donald, you're fired. I hope you had some yucks with me this Friday afternoon. It's a gorgeous day outside, at least here in southeastern Wisconsin. Soak up some vitamin D sun. Have a safe and happy weekend. I'll be back with you on Monday with Alderman Bob Bauman. I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But always remember, it's better when we stand together and laugh at Donald Trump.